All right, welcome back in. Final hour of the week here on Straight Up with Sturge. And, you know, it would not be a complete week here in the fall without checking in with our best friend, Eric Boynton, the sports writer for the Spartanburg Herald Journal, as we do to close out the week. And, Eric, you know, what is up with your broken New England Patriots, no longer the best team in AFC football?
You just want to dive right in, huh?
You got it, baby.
The dynasty's obviously over. Brady got old overnight. Gronk is old, and probably won't make the playoffs for the next decade at this point. So I'm really stressing out.
Yeah. It's kind of indicative of Boston sports right now, just overrated in every way, shape, or form, correct?
Well, somebody pointed out, some Boston fan on Twitter today, that if you watch that game last night, and listen, I'll give Rodgers all his credit. He's a great quarterback. He's probably more physically gifted than Brady is. But as far as production and everything else, to me, the discussion gets further and further away, the gap. He was horrendous in the second half last night. And then you wake up this morning and, like, all over Twitter and, like, ESPN, you have these Rodgers mentions, and it's the one, like, beautiful, perfect throw that he made. Didn't mention that Green Bay had, like, three first downs in the second half. Rodgers was way off target on the final drive. So, the Patriots are 7-3. They were banged up as they've ever been on the offensive line against the Titans. Gronk was out the whole game. Edelman took a pounding and eventually left. He was late in the game when it had already been decided. And, you know, I give the Titans a lot of credit. The Patriots got to figure some things out on defense, but man, they're 7-3. And I know Brady has not. This is the longest he's gone. This is like three games or whatever, looking on Brady like. But man, they won six in a row going in the last week, including a win over the Chiefs. So yeah. I'll push the panic button when they have to like win their final two to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And you brought up last night, Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks come back in the fourth quarter to take a, 27-23 win over the Green Bay Packers, which I think effectively eliminates the Packers from being a wild card team this year. So have you ever seen somebody that we hold in such high esteem as Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay quarterback, do so little with an organization in this length of time, and it feels like this entire thing's coming to an end?
Yeah, and it's like he's, and it's been pointed out, he's kind of, and I know Brady gets on guys. He's had some historic fights on the sidelines with coaches and yelling at teammates, but it just seems like there's an arrogance. And Rodgers was fantastic when he came here for the BMW Charity Pro-Am the last 2 years. I was dying to hate the guy. I was up all revved up going, this guy's going to be the biggest jerk. He's probably as nice to the media and the fans, even the fans wearing rival jerseys were kind of heckling him in a good-natured way. He was absolutely terrific with his time and his demeanor. It couldn't have been any nicer. But it just seems like he's got an arrogance out there that with such a young team, even though they get some talented guys, some of those pass catchers above and beyond Devontae Adams, I can't give you the names off the top of my head, but they all are rangy with speed, and Aaron Jones has really just burst onto the scene the last few weeks. So it seems like they've got the talent, but you're right. And then you factor in Brett Favre, Sturge, so they're going to go like 25 years with two of the five greatest quarterbacks in the history of the league and possibly only come away with two Super Bowls combined. I mean, it really is weird that they haven't been able to put better people around him. And I know a lot of people are blaming the contract that he signed. He went ahead and took the big money deal, whereas Brady and some other guys have been known to take a little less just so they could sign players around him. Look, I mean, Seattle fell apart right after they couldn't afford to pay a bunch of guys when Russell Wilson went ahead and took the max dollars rather than going, instead of $25 million, maybe I'll just take $21 million over the next 5 years, and we can maybe have a little bit more to put better guys around me. But to me, Wilson looked like the better quarterback last night, not only with his the way he moves, but he threw some beautiful balls. And I'm not a big Russell Wilson guy, but, I just don't get what the underachievement that the Packers continually pull off here with one of the greatest of all time playing QB.
All right, as we continue with our buddy Eric Boynton, follow him on Twitter, at Eric J. Boynton. He is a sports writer for the Spartanburg Herald Journal. And Eric, Military Appreciation Day at Clemson on Saturday. You know, outside the service academies, I maintain Clemson does it as well as anybody else. A lot of people have, if they're new to the area, don't realize that Clemson was a military school when my dad went there, that they gave you a gun your freshman year and told you to sleep with it. And that school ended up having the third amount of graduates killed in World War II as to any other school. Number one, not for West Point and the Naval Academy. So there's a lot going on. It's a 7 p.m. kickoff in Death Valley, but I maintain it doesn't matter if it's cool-handed Luke at quarterback with Trevor Lawrence. The front seven of this defense is what leads the way for this Tiger program.
Well, it is, and you mentioned Military Day, and of course, I don't know that I've ever experienced. I don't know that does every college do a military appreciation day?
Most do now.
They all don't. Most do now. Okay, yeah. And I'm going to guess that some places, obviously, like Texas A&M and schools that aren't inside the academy system, like your armies and navies, obviously. I'm sure A&M puts on a heck of a show up there. But no, Clemson's reputation is huge. I know it's something at least that Bowden and now even more so Sweeney just take a tremendous amount of pride in. And then you factor in Military Day and all the pomp and circumstance and all they do to surround that. And you consider this is when they celebrate Senior Day. They recognize the senior sturge this game, and then they come down solo down the hill and kind of have all their senior achievement stuff. And then the final day is just more about, you know, and every other year, of course, their game with South Carolina is on a home and away basis. So they just go ahead and celebrate it, always a second to last home game now. So if you throw it in and all the success this class has had, it promises to be a heck of an environment. And you're right. I mean, Cleveland Farrell, the defensive end, did make a great point. If you've got a great quarterback, and Duke has a great one, Daniel Jones, mm-hmm. who went for almost 600 yards of total offense in last week's game, a close win over North Carolina. He threw for 360, ran for 180 plus, and he's a 6'5", 225-pound guy that ran for 186 yards. So that tells you something about his skill set. Mel Kiper Jr.'s big board, newest big board, just came out a few days ago. Daniel Jones, he had him going 18th overall, the third quarterback off the board taken, should he decide to come out. So Cleveland Farrell said, whenever the other team has a great quarterback or your team has a great quarterback, almost doesn't matter as much of what's around you or how big the gap is in talent overall. You have a chance to win the game. It's the most important position in sports. And if you've got a quarterback, you've got a fighting chance. So I think Duke has Clemson's undivided attention, mm-hmm. even without all the other stuff swirling around the game that we just talked about. I think that maybe there could be a chance for a letdown or a trap game. I'm not a fan of that term, but looking ahead to the rivalry game, even though they'll be a massive favorite there, I think the fact that Duke has arguably the best quarterback they've seen all year, and they've seen a couple of good ones in Ryan Finley and Eric Dungy over at Syracuse, I think this is going to have Clemson on edge, ready to play, because they know if this dude gets hot, makes the right read, starts, you know, churning out some offense on the ground and then making some nice throws, they could build a little confidence and build a little momentum. I don't think it's going to happen. Jones, he's the kind of guy that will keep you on edge despite the fact you're a 28-point favorite.
All right. Down in Columbia, they'll be having Military Appreciation Night, Senior Day as well for the Gamecocks. But, you know, this is, thank God it's Chattanooga, because in my opinion, Eric, this is the type of game that had let one loss beat you twice written all over it. South Carolina, you know, hearing a little bit of chippiness from some of my friends, they did not like the fact they couldn't complete a 17-point lead there in the second half at Florida last week. So, listen, Chattanooga has 6 wins, but I think worst case scenario is for this game to be close at halftime and you hear some murmur in the stadium.
Yeah, you don't want to hear. I mean, that stunk here in Jake Bentley. Whether he deserved it or not, you pay your money and you do what you want. I don't know about booing college kids, but, you know, that's I'm not totally against it, because it's part of the whole gig is signing up to play major college football. So I don't really have a huge problem with it, but it was kind of bad. I think it was the A&M game where Bentley was came back off an injury and heard a lot of boos, and he handled it absolutely top-notch, as good as you can handle it, and said he didn't like hearing it, but he understands it. And, you don't want to all of a sudden see this team that – I mean, that was just so disappointing and heartbreaking the way they were. They had that game, as you just mentioned, last Saturday that would have been a nice, nice win. You come in with a ton of momentum. You kind of beat up on Chattanooga, maybe get everybody in a chance to play, and then you rest up and think, okay, we got some momentum coming into the rivalry game, even though it's going to be awful tough to come into Death Valley at night and beat the second-ranked team in the country. But you're right. They need a good start. They're so banged up in the secondary. I know they announced – J.C. Horn, the freshman, was going to move from corner to safety because they're having all kinds of safety issues. They were keeping Shai Smith, the sophomore receiver from Union County, who was having another solid year. They, you know, they were talking about they've kept him up to speed because he was a good defensive back in high school. So, I mean, they're really banged up right now. Bryson Allen Williams, I mean, such a key factor to that. To that defense. So yeah, you want to get out there, seize control of the game, keep the crowd kind of into it. Don't give Chattanooga any hope, because you're right. If they come off at halftime and it's 14-10, even leading, yeah, you're going to see a chunk of folks probably leave at halftime. It's going to be cold. They're going to be disappointed, and there's a lot of bad feelings going on after. A lot of fans feel they gave that one away last week.
All right, Eric, as we begin closing up shop with you, two questions. Number one, they're local to Spartanburg. The Carolina Panthers, that's a big game at Detroit on Sunday at 1 p.m. Detroit's only 3-6 on the year, but the problem with the Panthers, they're only 1-3 on the road so far this year. And, of course, you knew they were going to take it on the chin Thursday night at Pittsburgh, you know, everything against them. And are we going to see another scenario? They should be rested with a little bit longer time off, but it's just easier to shake off when you got your brains beat in versus, you know, one play here, one play there. Have we done something different? It could have changed the outcome of the game. I expect Cam Newton and the Panthers to be rested and focused on Sunday.
Yeah, I expect a completely different look. And like you said, that's awful tough. To, on the short week, and I don't care how well you're playing, to go into a Pittsburgh team, you know, that's got a couple of losses and no need to coast, and maybe with the Le'Veon deadline coming down, I have no idea if that has anything to do with it, but you got to think at least the offensive line and James Conner might have been a little bit more focused in on that game, going, hey, we don't want to leave a stinker out there, and then, you know, have Le'Veon's deadline to report to play this season come up and all this stuff. And instead, they just crushed him, and everybody was like, you know, happy trails, Le'Veon. We don't need you. Look how good we are. So I think the Dak was stacked against Carolina. I agree 100% with you. This has been such a good team this year. They've been so much fun to watch. Torrey Smith, the veteran wide receiver, who's having a solid year, is going to be out with injury. But and then they released C.J. Anderson, which I thought was interesting. I really thought he'd have an impact on this team, but you know, they let him go, but I think you're going to see a rested, rejuvenated team, refocused. They're a much better team than the Lions. They go in there, no weather issues going into the dome, and I think they'll handle their business, because certainly they still have a puncher's chance against the Saints for the division title. They're going to need a lot of help, and I don't think it's going to happen, but you know, you're still in that hunt, and obviously you're still very, very much in the wild card hunt, and it's all about just getting into those the playoff proceedings. You know as well as I do, it doesn't really matter how you get in, where you get in, just get in, give yourself a chance.
No doubt. All right, the other thing is David Pearson, the Silver Fox, passed away earlier this week, and you know, a legend here to the upstate, and you know, I didn't realize how many of the old NASCAR teams used to be in the Spartanburg area, because so many of them are up in that Concord Moore area now in North Carolina. So it was a huge passing, and you know what, Spartanburg, it turned out, just missed the opportunity to have one of those major NASCAR tracks built here. Think about how this thing could have ended differently.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I know as much about NASCAR, admittedly, as I could solve some like algebra problems written in Chinese for right. you right now. But obviously that tells you how big a figure Pearson is, not only in the NASCAR world, but obviously locally here. Is he's one of the few guys I do know a little bit about and know that, you know, he was a driver. I think he was Sports Illustrated's driver of the century over Richard Petty. He's had some legendary runs. He's so well known about being one of the good guys here. And like you mentioned, I've never really studied too far into it, but it looks like they were so close to, you know, becoming the hub of, it would have been a whole different area. I mean, Spartanburg might have been a, you know, the major city in South Carolina if that had happened 40 years ago. You never know. But, you know, you got guys, we got Bud Moore here, you know, the legendary owner mechanic's not the right word, but I forget, crew pit chief, I guess, for a long time, and also a driver, and Cotton Owens is a guy that goes way back, and there's all kinds of stories about how you could walk into mainly a local lunch and watering hole here called Ike's, which serves one of the best hamburgers in the state. And you could go into this, you know, kind of your typical just it's like in a, it's nowhere near any other industry. It's in a, kind of in a neighborhood. And it's just off the beaten path, and I don't think you know, they've done any work on it in 40 years. It's just your basic hole in the wall with a ton of personality, and there's just all kinds of stories about how you could walk in and grab a burger, and there's Cotton Owens and Pearson and Bud Moore sitting around chatting, and every once in a while they'd have a Waltrip or somebody like that in town, or one of the older guys, that are well known in the sport, and they might be in visiting. They go, hey, let's go on over and get a burger, and people come up and say hello, and next thing you know, they've got 4, 5, 6 people who just randomly walked in, who don't know them other than who they are, sitting around and enjoying the conversation and listening to these guys tell great stories. And by all accounts, I have talked before, but he's a great storyteller, and apparently all three of them could really tell a tale from back of the old days and even weigh in on what's going on in racing today. So, yeah, just a huge, huge figure. I mean, a big loss, but the guy, you know, led a great life. And that's I think he's the last of the old guard now, gone from Spartanburg, with all three of those gentlemen having passed away. And all three of them, as far as I know, are in the NASCAR Hall of Fame, which to have three from Spartanburg in a Hall of Fame they started, I think, less than a decade ago is pretty impressive.
All right, listen, let's get together here in the next week or so, and let's swap some stories as well. I miss you, buddy. And tell us what you're working on. Of course, which press box will you be in this weekend?
I will be I'll be over to Clemson,
okay,
and we'll have somebody over at the South Carolina game as well. I've got a story running tomorrow on the friendship between Dabo Swinney and David Cutcliffe, and he's apparently become as close to Cutcliffe as any other coach in the league in the 10 years. They kind of came in together. Cutcliffe was hired full-time at Duke the same year that Swinney took over as the interim coach. So got that up and running. We'll have a little capsule look at the Gamecocks game and the Tigers game, and then full coverage moving in from there. So, another great football week and another day closer to getting into those what really matters the most. I know for a lot of people around here anyway, and that's those final college football playoff rankings. And we'll see if Clemson gets a chance to go back a fourth time.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you here in the next couple of days. Thanks for everything you do. There's Eric Boynton from the Spartanburg Herald Journal. And we'll come back. It's open phones for the rest of this Friday. So, Diesel, it's been kind of an interesting Friday, no doubt about it. It is open phones. Whatever you got to say, get it off your mind between now and 4 o'clock or 7 o'clock, because we're headed down to Sumter. Is the Burns Rebels in the second round of the South Carolina High School playoffs taking on the Sumter Gamecocks. So you can hear G-Mac and Randy Cable and Matt Hogan on the call as soon as we're off the air at 7 p.m. One of the sadder stories, especially when you find out how the wreck took place this morning. We had talked about Tammy from Auburn. You know, she was she became a legend. And this is the type of remembrances that are being put out to her on Twitter right now. This one's from Hugh Morris. I don't know Hugh Morris from Hole in the Head. But I think he actually probably tweets what a lot of us Alabama fans have to say. Longtime listener, never a caller, but always look forward to the Tammy rants on the Paul Feinbaum show. Prayers to her family. As a Bama fan, one moment of silence in a war damn eagle for Tammy. No longer on the air, forever in our hearts and thoughts. I mean, can you really say it any better than that when it comes to somebody that became a persona, a personality due to her love for Auburn and her rants on the Feinbaum show? And this goes back way before the SEC network was ever invented.
Yeah, you know, I guarantee you there's a gigantic outpouring of love and support of all the fans of that show. It doesn't matter who they're a fan of. They're all fans of hers.
Well,
today.
I would think that there's going to be some type of memorial fund set up. If you did, if you didn't hear us earlier, it wasn't just Tammy that passed away. She had her 3-year-old granddaughter in the car with her this morning when it looks like a big rig truck that was hauling explosives had a tire blowout and lost control and went into her. So I would think that there's got to be a way. She was a proud grandmother. She bragged on those grandkids. Mm-hmm. I would think that there's got to be a way that we can
absolutely
get
tragic
started
for that
up.
Family.
All right. Also in football this weekend, you know what? I want to see them go ahead and get put out of their misery. Florida State. You know what they have on the the last thing on the line for Florida State football this year, Diesel, is trying to get to a 37th consecutive bowl game. Now that's pretty impressive, right? 37 consecutive years of going to a bowl game.
Are they going to schedule UL Monroe again?
Well, that's the thing. Last year, they kind of got it granted to Mother Nature. They went back and scheduled a UL Monroe to make sure that they got to 6 wins, which got them an Independence Bowl bid. So this year at 4-6, with games still coming up against Boston College and the Florida Gators, somebody eliminate Florida State, put them out of their hassle, because 37 years might have an asterisk next to it after last year. So let's just go ahead and get that out of the way. Unfortunately, one of the weaknesses for Florida State's their running game, and let's see if A.J. Dillon can get anything going. All right, let's get Billy in before the break. Billy, I hope you're having a good afternoon. Welcome in.
Sturge, Diesel, what's up, brother?
Man, it is Friday. Thank goodness.
Yeah, I hate to hear that about Tammy. I watch that show occasionally on ESPN, SEC Network, or whatever that channel is. You know, I've heard her calls a few times. I've not obviously don't know the lady, but that's just tragic no matter who you are, especially with her granddaughter 3 years old being in the car. So, you know, prayers to the family and friends, and I know that's going to touch everybody in that area because that's a big show down there. So anyway, I heard my brother earlier, and he was talking about how good of a win that was. It's only good if you're on the receiving end of it. If you're on the giving away end, it's not good.
Yeah, show me somebody that likes to lose, and I'll show you a loser. And again, here's the deal, Billy. Let me see if you can buy what I'm selling you a little bit. Right now, in year number 3 of a rebuild, and let's be honest, Will Muschamp had to do a rebuild because Coach Spurrier did not do a whole lot of recruiting his last year and a half. Is that fair?
Yes.
All right. It sucks because nobody likes to lose, but you got to look at what got you up 31-14 instead of harp on what caused you to give up that lead, because you're talking about a number, thin numbers, especially on the defensive side, and now completely just the safeties are gone. You know what I mean? So I know that's not what anybody wants to hear at this point in time, but I think you got to look at the small victories that are being built, which is a lot having to do with recruiting. I know there's been a couple of decommits, but I think there's more positive than negative going on. However, this thing's close at halftime against Chattanooga on Saturday night. I expect to hear some murmurs in Williams-Brice Stadium.
No, I would agree with that. I don't expect – and I heard Diesel earlier talking about the Citadel loss. So if you go back, and this is not an excuse, and look at that play where – I can't remember the guy's name that played for South Carolina at the time. He's on the rounds now, if I'm not mistaken. But he had a touchdown that was returned on a kick return, and there was never an offsides on that. But anyway, I don't expect them to lose. I don't think it's going to be that close, to be honest. And it's not that I'm arrogant. I just don't expect that.
I just think
South Carolina's talent level is better than that. So, yeah. But you're right. If there is, they will be. And there's going to be some fans, let's be honest, Sturge, that's going to do that until he beats Clemson or Georgia. Yeah. It's just the way that it is. And right now, their programs are in a different spot than ours. And we just have to accept that. I think recruiting is going exceptionally well, considering what they've come off of the last couple of years. Now, it's like I've told Greg on his show, in 2 or 3 years, if you're still having these same problems where you're not competitive against Clemson and Georgia, no matter how they're recruiting, then you've got to start talking about a change. But until then, you've got to at least let him build some depth. And I do blame this Florida loss on him, because here's the thing. I know he can't change his nature, and none of us can. But if you don't take your foot off of the accelerator in that situation, you just continue to throw the ball because you know what you've got as far as the losses on the defensive side. But, you know, 7-5, I thought it would be a down year. I'm still going to say it's a down year if that's what they end up being. But you can still build on that, and I don't want to get rid of the guy yet because of the recruiting and the way that the program seems to be heading in the right direction. We'll talk about that in two or three more years.
All right.
Anyway, Sturge, I'll hang up and listen, buddy.
Thanks, take Billy, care. As always. I appreciate it. First of all, you can't make a move now. All right. One thing South Carolina got under Spurrier until he sort of reached his climax, if you will, at South Carolina is they got stability. And that's what South Carolina desperately needs again right now, some stability. Whether Boom's the guy that can deliver it or not, I don't know. But you got to give him more time. Here's the thing. Year number four, Diesel, that's next year. You get your doors hammered by the likes of Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson again, then you have the right to go, are we closing this gap? You know what I mean? And who knows? South Carolina's entire year, their entire pedigree could be changed next Saturday night in Death Valley. No, I'm not necessarily talking with a win. You take it in the context of last night. South Carolina's women's basketball team is just a couple of years removed from a national title under Don Staley. You know, Asia Wilson, Rookie of the Year in the WNBA. Clemson has been a dumpster fire at best in women's basketball. But for the first time in 5 to 8 years, you saw a little bit of fight last night out of the Clemson women's basketball program in a loss in Columbia to the Lady Gamecocks. So you could even have that happen next Saturday night in Death Valley. If South Carolina went in there and played toe-to-toe and it was 31-27, once you get the immediacy of the outcome over, there would be a lot of good things to hang your hat on. Clemson women's basketball last night, despite a 16-2 run at one point by the Lady Gamecocks, there was some things they did against a team that's just a couple of years removed from the national championship, a la Clemson football, that were good and will benefit that program. So who knows? Again, next Saturday night, that will be the capper on the regular season. Your thoughts as well, 844-GSP-ESPN. When we come back, number 24, Cincinnati. They're at number 11, UCF. Could the Bearcats do us all a big favor? Couple of news and notes on former Gamecock baseball players. The Boston Red Sox re-signed World Series MVP Steve Pierce. Again, former Gamecock, big home runs in the Fall Classic. So the Red Sox re-signed Steve Pierce. Also, Boston Red Sox center fielder Jackie Bradley Jr. He's going to be in Columbia, or he is in Columbia this weekend for the Gamecocks versus Chattanooga matchup. And, of course, Jackie Bradley hot off winning his first American League Gold Glove in center field. All right, Diesel, can number 24 Cincinnati do us all a favor right now and knock off number 11 Central Florida tomorrow? Game day's there. Everything else is going on. And now, you know, it has been the athletic director at Central Florida complaining about Kirk Herbstreit and what he said on game day. And now you got Mackenzie Milton, the quarterback out there, saying, hey, there's no, we're better than number 3 Notre Dame. Again, you hit the nail on the head a month ago when you said it feels like the little dog going around with Spike, you know what I mean, in the cartoon back in the day. But we could end a lot of this if Cincinnati would just handle business in Orlando tomorrow.
Sturge, why do you hate underdogs so much?
I don't mind underdogs. I hate guys that I hate the small drunk guy in the bar at night that has to yell the loudest to prove that either he A, knows more, or thinks he's Bobby Bad, you know what. You know what
well,
I mean?
And I
you
think
see, you see it all the time. And that, to me, is kind of what Central Florida, UCF, has done.
I think it's been proven that this is what they have to do.
Okay.
to get any attention. I mean, they've only gone undefeated the last two seasons running.
Well,
is that not good enough?
Well, I am taking away their their national championship from last year.
Do I think they deserve to be in the playoff? No. Right. I absolutely do not think that UCF has shown what it takes to be in the playoff. But do I think they're getting snubbed by the college football playoff poll just a little bit? Yeah.
Oh.
I would put them in the top 10.
Yeah, I probably would as well. But you got to play defense as well, and I keep going back to that Temple offense.
You don't need a great defense when you've got a prolific offense.
There's a lot of truth in that, but at some point it may get you beat.
But it hasn't.
Yeah, here's the deal. Well, of course, they haven't played anybody. The Bearcats are 9-1, and this is going to pose the toughest test for Central Florida. And, of course, they've got – they've got the threat that could cause Central Florida problems. They have a true dual threat quarterback. His name is Desmond Ritter. He's got a couple of different pass catchers who have caught at least 15 passes heading into this game, and a running back that has almost 1,100 yards and 17 touchdowns. If Central Florida couldn't hit anybody against Temple, I'm not sure that they're going to be able to hit anybody against Cincinnati. But whether they're doing it right, doing it wrong, I don't know. But game day threw them a bone this week. So it just to me right now, like I said, it just feels like they're the loudmouth in the bar that everybody that wants everybody paying attention to them. And maybe that's the way that they've got to go about doing this. You know what I mean? Right or wrong, I will go ahead and suggest this. You know, Nick Saban, the head coach of Alabama, has been the only proponent. Bama's catching a bunch of grief this weekend, Diesel, about playing the Citadel. All right? Nick Saban is the only head coach in the Southeastern Conference that has year after year proposed to move from an 8 to a 9-game SEC schedule. Nobody wants to touch it. Is that Nick Saban's fault? That the rest of the league won't do it? Because guess what? You could eliminate one of these weekends this weekend by going to a 9-game schedule. Now, the others go, why should we do it in the SEC if it's the toughest league year in, year out? Which most cases you can say that's probably the truth. Keep it at 8. Why should we stress ourselves? So I don't know where to go on this one. It sucks that Bama's playing the Citadel the week before the Auburn game. But it is what it is, and it's what the league figured out. And you know what? If your coach and Nick Saban doesn't have the leverage to try to pass through a 9-game schedule, nobody else in the league wants to touch it. Here's one thing the College Football Playoff Committee could do to enhance themselves in the long run. Create some consistency. Each conference plays the same number of conference games. You know what I mean? Then that would, you don't have as much leeway when it comes to the schedule. But that would be a nice starting point, and that's why you wouldn't have the SEC SoCon pillow fights that you tend to do. But even those, some teams do it better, Diesel. You want to know what Southeastern Conference teams are paying out this weekend? Because here's the thing. You think we don't want it to happen, but we want UAB to make money, correct? Because of what they've gone through. They're going to Texas A&M this week, and they're getting paid $1.6 million to go play. All right? Georgia's hosting UMass this weekend. You really excited to go spend money to see Georgia-UMass?
Whoopee.
UMass is getting $1.5 million to come play that game in Athens. LSU is playing the nation's longest losing streak in D1 FBS football. They're playing Rice. How much money do you think Rice is getting to go take that beat down in Baton Rouge this weekend?
$1.4
million. Kentucky's playing Middle Tennessee this weekend. $1.255 million that Rick Stockstill and the Blue Raiders are getting. Liberty's playing at Auburn this weekend. Liberty, Turner Gill, head coach, are getting paid $1.25 million to do it. We talked about Idaho dropping back from FBS to FCS. Idaho's at Florida this weekend to the tune of $1.2 million. And then you look at what Alabama and South Carolina have managed to do. Alabama's got the Citadel paying them $500,000. South Carolina's got Chattanooga paying them $400,000.
At least Middle Tennessee's 7-4.
But my point
Kentucky's playing at least a half decent team this week.
I know, but my point being UAB needs that $1.6 million.
Yeah.
Middle Tennessee needs that $1.255 million. So if you don't have this weekend, guess what? Those teams can't make any money off of it. So it's kind of darned if you do, darned if you don't. You know what I mean? 844 GSP ESPN. They floated the first matchups in a potential group of five playoff with App State. See their name shown up. All right, welcome back in. Remember, we're headed down to Sumter, South Carolina in a few minutes. G-Mac, Randy Cable, Matt Hogan will be on the call at Burns at Sumter, second round of the playoffs. So, on his final day before vacation, Lonzo is doing the Burns game tonight. Why? Because he's just trying to show us up and look good. I'm glad our program director is officially out of town, so you can't suck up to him.
He's listening. He's always listening.
All right.
Well, you can't really show up and look good when you're dressed as an Ohio State Buckeye fan.
Whatever, man.
All right, so
at least I'm not wearing an Alabama tracksuit.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. Hey, listen, this is the greatest cover. Hold on. It ain't much more than a trash bag. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why I like this thing. It's just enough to keep you warm, but it will repel water. And my God, we've had some water here in the upstate.
If you were a single man, it would repel other things too.
Well, my face repels women, okay? We get that. All right. So listen, we've been making fun of the SEC teams. I don't know if you heard this. Texas A&M forking out $1.6 million, Lonzo, to host UAB this weekend. Georgia's paying out $1.5 million to host UMass. LSU paying $1.4 million to host Rice. Kentucky paying out $1.255 million to host Middle Tennessee. Auburn paying $1.25 million to host Liberty. Florida paying $1.2 million to host Idaho. So it looks like Bama and South Carolina are freaking geniuses. Bama's only paying $500,000 to the Citadel, and South Carolina's only paying $400,000 to Chattanooga. Of those games mentioned, Diesel, what has the best chance of an upset?
You tell me.
I'm going UAB.
Now, I would love to see that because yesterday when we had our athletic director, you know, what's your five names? Bill Clark is on my list. But going into Texas A&M, who, listen, hanging on by a thread right now, Jimbo Fisher needs to win as many games in that 10-year, $75 million contract. That may be difficult for UAB. I think it's Middle Tennessee at Kentucky. Because Kentucky now it's basketball season again there. You know, just 3 weeks ago, it was all football season when they were 7-1 and all that. Now they're 7-3. They lose to Tennessee in Knoxville last weekend. That has the feeling of a game that could beat you twice. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
You know, I get what you're saying, but at the same time, you lost to Tennessee last week. It can feel like you're beating Tennessee this week. So you can take your revenge out on Tennessee. But it wouldn't shock me if Middle Tennessee won the game. I mean, out of the two that we mentioned,
now the one that wouldn't shock me is Liberty, who knocked off Troy, was it, earlier this year. What do you expect out of Auburn the week before they play Alabama? Auburn has to be one of the more bipolar football programs, not only in the Southeast, but in the entire country.
Liberty's in the middle of an embarrassing season. They had to play New Mexico State twice just to fill out a schedule.
I know I'm showing my ignorance here, but how long has Liberty been playing football?
15, 20 years.
For
some reason, I thought this was like their third year.
They were really good at the FCS level. They just moved up this year as a provisional FBS. Right. What they were able to do is they were able to get the NCAA to grant them a waiver to play independent FBS football because no conference would invite them.
So that's why they had to play New Mexico State, who was also in that same position, I think, twice.
Well, New Mexico State was in forced independence because the Sun Belt said goodbye. We don't want to fly 8,000 miles to go play.
Now, it's been the better part of 15 years since the Christian Broadcasting Network got Liberty a football team. You know what I mean? Because that's what it was back in the day. Do you know who their head coach is? I guarantee you remember him.
Tammy Faye Baker.
Nope, even better than that, Turner Gill. You remember the old Nebraska quarterback?
Yeah, they were really good the last two, three years in the FCS.
Yeah.
It's a scary football team. if they catch you on the right week.
Well, who knows with Auburn? I mean,
and they got so much stinking money in that program.
Auburn
it's
could
crazy.
Say, I'm looking ahead. Now, we like to have some fun with the Ohio State University, Alabama, App State. But, again, I think we all learned a cruel lesson earlier today that fans are fans for a reason. I don't know if you caught the news, Lonzo. You've been back there working, getting ready for the Burns broadcast. But the Paul Feinbaum show, Tammy, the famous Auburn fan that called in and would go on the rant, she and her three-year-old granddaughter were killed in a car wreck
this
morning.
Are you serious?
Yep.
Oh, that is horrible.
It hit my Twitter. It didn't matter if it came from a Georgia fan, a Florida fan, an Alabama fan, or an Auburn fan. They were all, you know, hey, you know, 3 years old. One thing at 53 with Tammy to pass away. It's another thing for a three-year-old grandchild to pass away in that. So we wish everybody with the Paul Feinbaum show. We got a great relationship with Paul. He has been on this show before. We wish him our heartfelt condolences because, you know what, it allows you to put the ability in proper perspective. Sports is for fun. That's real life. That is real life. So, Lonzo, that's why I challenge all of our listeners, go home tonight. Tell the people that are closest to you that you love them. Give them a hug. If you happen to have a little argument with your wife of 25 years, don't go to bed mad. Just don't go to bed, man. You just don't know if you're going to wake up. And, again, that was one of those stopgap moments because here we are getting into Iron Bowl week next week. I mean, we've had trees poison over the Alabama-Auburn game. This is one thing that can bring everybody together.
Yeah, it's man, that's rough. I'm shocked by that news.
Yeah.
I really am.
Yeah, 8 o'clock this morning. I mean, not only with her 3-year-old in there, just to let you know, a tanker truck with explosives. Apparently, a wheel blew out and went across the center line and made contact with them. And you can imagine the rest of that story. All right, catch Burns Sumter, round two of the high school playoffs right here on ESPN Upstate. I'll see you at 2 p.m. tomorrow on 93.3 The Planet Rocks for Ingalls College Football Today, brought to you by Carolina Coaches.